It is Free For All Friday here on the Council of Trent podcast. And today I want to share with you an interview that I had a little while ago with Biblical Bookworm. She has an awesome channel. She puts a lot of effort into her content to talk about Catholicism, Christianity, the faith. Highly recommend it. And she invited me on to talk about how to debate people without losing your cool. And we were reviewing a Protestant book that I read back in the day that really helped me to learn how to do this, called Tactics by Greg Kokel. One day I want to write the Catholic version of Tactics at some point. So we talked about that, and I hope our conversation edifies you. So check it out.
So maybe we could start with something that the book doesn't really talk about, and that's the question, how to prepare for a debate. What would you say, what's necessary to do for people who maybe have studied theology and some people who maybe don't know that much?
Sure. So being able to do well in a debate on theology or philosophy, let's say you're debating an atheist on the existence of God or a Protestant on the nature of the papacy, what's key there is both knowledge and skill set. So you want to know your position extremely well, and you also want to know all of the possible objections to your position. You also want to know your opponent's position very well, because they'll usually be arguing for or against something. You want to know their position well and the most powerful objections against it. So there's a knowledge aspect that you want to be very well prepared, just that the arguments aren't unfamiliar to you, that you're familiar, you've gone through them all. And also there is a skill set that you have to develop, which is the ability to speak clearly and in a way that is pleasant for people to hear and to understand what you're saying. So I've gotten advice before from my friend Jimmy Akin to put smile in your voice. So you want to be able to communicate information in a winsome way and in a way that's understandable to people. And then also be able to quickly respond in a succinct way when someone raises an argument, so that in a rebuttal or cross-examination, you're able to zero in on the weakness in the other person's position and succinctly and clearly explain that weakness to the audience. And when it comes to debates, the Kokel book, Tactics, is about having dialogues with other people and how to engage them and to really help them change their mind on issues. In a debate, you're not focusing on changing the other debater's mind so much as you want to present your view to all the people who are watching the debate and might be on the fence about the issue.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. He also writes in his book that sometimes you don't convince your opponent, but you convince someone in the audience. Absolutely. And do you maybe have some book recommendations for apologetics, maybe for beginners? What would you say are the top apologetic books?
Well, for beginners, I would recommend that you read the New Testament and the Catechism of the Catholic Church. I think for anyone who wants to be a good Catholic apologist, 90% of it is just understanding the faith well. So if you know the Bible, especially the New Testament, very well, and if you know the Catechism explains what the Church teaches and also has some apologetic arguments in it. Catechism and New Testament are vital for someone just to read and study. Other books I would recommend for someone who is starting out would be my book, Why We're Catholic. It's a short, solid read. My friend Jimmy Akin has a great book called A Daily Defense. You can do one argument a day, and in a year, you have learned 365 good arguments. I also recommend Catholic Answers School of Apologetics at schoolofapologetics.com, where you can just kind of take courses and start to learn apologetics that way.
Okay, yeah, thank you for the recommendations. And then maybe let's continue. You said that it's important to present the truth in the right way and to say it in a way that people want to listen. That's something that Greg Kokel also mentions in his book, because he says that we should try to avoid certain words that might trigger a negative emotion in people, or that some people might have a negative connotation with. And he, for example, he suggests to exchange trust for faith for trust, so to speak, is to say that we don't have faith in Jesus, but we have trust in Jesus. Would you agree with that? Would you say that it's important to, or it's good to exchange those words for non-religious or more neutral words?
I think it's always helpful to use language that the other person can appreciate and remove any linguistic obstacles that are possible. I do want to say at the outset, for those who are interested in this book, it's a very good book, Tactics. Kokel himself, though, is actually not Catholic. He's Protestant. So one day, I'm really hoping to write my own version of Tactics from a Catholic perspective. It's on the list, but there's so many other books I have to write in the meantime. But there's a lot in Tactics, though, I agree with. I agree with almost all of the book when it comes to how to have these good conversations with people. So one of them is St. Paul writes in his letter to the Colossians about how you should season your words with salt, always knowing what to say to each one. So we understand how our words affect people. So if you have an atheist who thinks faith is just ignorant belief, instead of saying I have faith, you can say I have trust, which is really what faith is. It's a kind of trust. It's not irrational. Or for Catholics, not saying there's certain phrases that a Protestant could misunderstand. Like if you say, oh, well, Catholics believe we're saved by faith and works. Well, the church doesn't actually teach that. And a Protestant can think that it sounds like you have to do a certain number of good works to get into heaven. And that's not what the church teaches. Rather, what you can say is that we believe that our salvation begins by neither works nor faith. It's just something we receive in baptism. And then we cooperate with the grace of God to persist in being in relationship with him until we die. And good works are a part of that cooperation, but not necessary, but there's no set amount of good works one must do to be saved. Or so that might be one example there, that when you use language, always be cognizant. So instead of saying we're saved by faith and works, to say we are saved by being united to Christ and being obedient to him, for example.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for bringing the Catholic perspective in, because that is a somewhat of a problem with the book that is not Catholic, it's just Christian. But I would definitely read your book if you write something like Tactics for Catholics. So I'll be the first person to make a video about it. Let's go to another tactic. A big focus of the book is also that he suggests the reader to lead with questions in order not to be that aggressive, and in order to, that's a good thing, because first of all, you get to know what the other person really thinks. And so you know what the disagreements are, where you maybe agree. And I think that's also a way to be respectful. And so I think that gets close to what you're doing on your YouTube channel, that you don't laugh at people and that you always stay respectful. What are other ways, would you say, to stay respectful and to not make enemies when debating?
Well, I think this Socratic approach, the asking of questions, is extremely helpful. In the book, Kokel says, when you ask questions, it takes you out of the hot seat and puts you into the driver's seat of the conversation. And I've noticed that myself in many of the conversations that I have had, whether it's informal conversations or when it's been public dialogues with people who disagree with the Catholic faith, or when I just dialogue with people who call into Catholic Answers Live, for example. Asking questions really does lower the hostilities between people, because it's done in seeking understanding. Now, you can ask questions in a very aggressive way, like a lawyer does in a trial, badgering the witness. So you don't want to do that. But if you ask basic questions like, what do you think, and why do you think that, or how do you know that's true, then you can help the other person see the flaws in their worldview without having to explicitly tell the flaws to that person. If they discover it on their own, it's always much more effective for them.
Absolutely, yes. And I think maybe one danger of the tactic is that someone might use it against you, so that then you are asked so many questions. So I think that's when it's important to be really prepared for those debates. And also one thing that he mentions, when you are not that prepared, to admit when you don't know something, or to admit when you've been overmatched. And I think that's a really important quality of people. Also, for example, on Pints with Aquinas, where people, when he asks them something live, they just say that they don't know. And I think that that's really important to say, and not just say something that then is wrong at the end.
Yes, I think what you can do in this situation to avoid an uncomfortable feeling is to say, that's a very good question. I haven't looked into that as much as I would have liked, or I know other people who have looked into it more than I have. So I would like to get back to you on that issue. So let me look into that and get back to you. And then you don't have to say, I don't know. You can just say you haven't looked into it as much as you would have wanted to. It's something you want to clarify. And then you can continue the conversation further into the future.
That's actually a clever way to say that you don't know. I haven't thought of that. Yes. That's a good idea. Yeah. That's not that embarrassing, but it still says the same thing. Yeah. That's a good idea. And maybe another question for you. What is your main goal when you debate someone? Do you want to convince them? Do you want to convince anyone? Do you want to convince maybe the people who are listening? What's like the mindset you go in a debate?
The mindset I go into a debate is to present my position clearly and charitably. I want to present it as clearly as possible and as charitably as possible, and answer as many objections possible that are presented in the debate. And I feel like if I do that, then those who are watching the debate who are on the fence, who are undecided about the issue or lean slightly one way or another, will encourage them to want to investigate my position and investigate Catholicism more. I don't see debates as a way of ending an issue. I see them as a way of starting discussion. But I hope the debate in showing that the position I'm defending is a reasonable one, and in many cases that, you know, it's a true position for them to see in the debate, that will encourage them to investigate it more and then possibly to accept it for themselves.
I think you do that really well. I think you do that well, that you present your opinion charitably or the truth charitably. I like listening to your videos. And maybe one thing that I'd also like to mention here, what Greg Koch writes on this issue, he says that the goal in a debate is to show people that Christianity is worth thinking about. And I found that really beautiful. I think that was the most beautiful sentence in the whole book, because that really spoke to me. And that's also what I tried to do with my YouTube channel. I tried to show people that Christianity is worth thinking about. And I think that is a beautiful goal to have when making a debate. Do you have maybe any other things, any other tactics you'd like to add that are maybe not that explicitly explained in the book?
No, I don't recall if this is in the book or not, but I started writing a book like Tactics years ago. I never finished it. Maybe one day, like I said, I'll finish it in the future. But I remember I included like my own Catholic tactics, and one of them I called the hypothetical opponent. When you're talking to someone about Catholicism, you could say something like this. You could say, "What would you say to a Catholic who says this?" Or if one of my Catholic friends said to you, "Well, Jesus said, unless you eat my flesh and drink my blood, you have no life within you." Like, what? And they say that just believe what he says. What would you say to them? It's a subtle shift, but it can make the conversation more comfortable. Instead of you directly debating the person, they explain something and you're just asking them, well, there's people who disagree with you. What would you say to them? And then it kind of puts you a little bit more on the outside of the conversation, not like you're just directly debating or combating this person, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's a good idea, because it doesn't make the conversation so confrontational. It's less direct. That's a good one, yes. And maybe let's finish the video with your opinion on the book. How did you like the book? You said something that you read it many years ago, so I don't know how much you remember, but what would you rate the book maybe on a scale of 1 to 10?
Oh, well, I would probably rate it like a 7 or an 8. I think that it might be difficult for some people to remember all of the tactics that Koch puts forward. Like, they'll talk about Rhodes Scholar or suicide, an argument kills itself. I might use terms more like self-refuting, maybe. Mm-hmm. But he tries to use these memorable terms to remember arguments. He does a good job of explaining a tactic and then using a story from one of his own real conversations. So he really has employed these. It's not academic for him. So I think that that's very good. And my only shortcomings would just be, there might be a few other, and I've done similar Socratic dialogues with people for many years. There might be other approaches and tools that just were not included in the book that I would probably add. And then, of course, more explicitly Catholic examples would be nice. But I mean, I'm not going to fault the book for that. It was written by a Protestant. That's why I think it's a good book. But it'd be nice if someone, maybe it'll be me, maybe it'll be someone else, could write a similar book from a Catholic perspective.
I agree with your rating, actually. I would rate the book an 8 out of 10. And regarding what you said, that it's hard to remember the tactics, I agree with that part. But as far as I remember, at the end of the book, there is a summary of the tactics, I think. And that helps with memory. So you can just print that out or just remember that one list. That helps with memorizing. And my reason why I give it only an 8 out of 10 and not a 10 out of 10 is because, although I found the tactics good, I didn't like the apologetic examples he brought, because I thought I found them to be not deep enough. So he says, like, so your opponent would say this and you react with this, and then the opponent doesn't have anything else to say. And for me, that was really unsatisfying, because it's not realistic. People always say something.
Not how it happens in real life. Yeah,
that's the thing. And people, even if they don't know, usually they try to make something up. And oftentimes people do know something. And even for me as a Catholic or as a believer, I could go back and forth like four rounds with the same in my head with my inner monologue. So I found that really unsatisfying. And it's important to use the book just for tactics and for information. Just look up separate books or videos by Trent Horn on the topic to have a knowledge on the topic. And I think that's something that the book misses out on a bit.
I agree with that.
Yeah. Okay. Perfect. Thank you for taking the time for this video. And thank you for joining me today. That's been it for today. To my audience, I hope you liked the video and see you next week. God bless and bye.
Thank you guys for listening, and be sure to go and check out and subscribe to Biblical Bookworm's channel. And I hope you all have a very blessed weekend.